Rico. How
are you? Nice to see you, Charles.
Great to see you again. So Rico Mariani, partner architect.
I just finished the keynote here at the conference.
Nice.
And I'm still pumped on adrenaline from that. It was a fun talk. And I got to talk about what we plan to do in this release kind of from the get-go. And I put a lot of focus on kind of what we've done since Beta 1, which I'm really super excited about. You can't just be excited at Microsoft. You have to be super excited. It's not enough to be just excited. So I'm super excited about Beta 2.
Awesome. So last time we talked, it was sort of pre-Beta 1.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't really released any information or much about 2010.
You know, when we talked, the product's performance was like at the nadir. I think that was like the worst it was in the entire cycle. It started getting better right about then because we were focusing on perf. Uh-huh. And by the time we hit Beta 1, it was a little better. And now I'm super excited.
Excellent. So what exactly did you do? I mean, WPF integrated into IDE had some performance challenges, right?
Yeah.
So talk about what the problems were and essentially how you solved them in this latest release that came out.
Well, it's not like one problem.
Certainly.
And I can't lay the blame at the feet of WPF was all our woes. Certainly not. But we did a bunch of different stuff. And so you brought up WPF, so let me tell you kind of what was an issue with WPF. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of mixing of Win32 Classic UI and WPF UI, maybe more than any other application. I think no one had ever put them through the kind of grief we put them through with like the number and type of interactions. And so we found places where they had to synchronize their drawing thread with the Windows drawing to get a good look. And they were cautious about when they did that. Mm-hmm. And by putting them through this kind of gauntlet, they were able to find places where they were able to relax that and say, oh, no, we do have to synchronize here. We don't have to synchronize there. Oh, we can do a lighter weight synchronization here. And ultimately, what that resulted in is all the transitions in the product, like when we switch from regular editing to debug mode and there's a big redraw, or at startup when the windows are first painted, okay, all of those got like a lot faster.
Excellent.
And so we're typically talking about transitions that only take a couple hundred milliseconds, you know, 200 to 500 milliseconds. Well, if they knock another couple hundred milliseconds off of that, well, that's a lot. That's like half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you notice, you know, quite a bit of, it just feels snappier switching to debug mode, and you don't get the little, and sometimes it's not even time. It just, like, doesn't feel good because you get weird drawing stuff, and you're like, well, this drew, then that drew, then that drew, and even if it doesn't add up to very much time, it doesn't feel crisp. So a lot of that is just much, much better. And that's probably the biggest thing that the WPF team gave us. Another thing that was important was, the toolbar stuff that they did for us. We have a lot of toolbars. Like a lot. And they had a fairly simplistic toolbar layout algorithm, which they completely ref for us. That was one of the first things they did. Mm-hmm. Helped a ton. They had this thing. It was straightforward. It was a three-pass thing. You could look at the code from before. And they put a nice incremental one in there, and that helps a ton because we just have toolbars in every scenario. So, you know, you shave another 75 milliseconds or so off of the measure and arrange pass there, and, you know, a little bit between that, a little bit of the synchronization stuff, and, you know, you're right there. That makes a huge difference. So those are probably the biggest perf things we got from the WPF team.
Excellent.
Some things around text. A lot of times they had advice for us, like the little tabs. It's funny. It's like little stuff. The little tabs at the bottom of the output window and how we were clipping them. You know, we weren't getting the advantage of caching the text metrics. And they're like, no, just ask the question like this and you'll get all this lovely caching behavior. And we're like, oh, we can do that. You know, so a lot of times it was just fairly simple stuff we were doing that we were just not using the infrastructure especially smartly.
Okay.
So between what they did for us and what we did for ourselves, I think we got to a really good place. But a lot of the stuff had almost nothing to do with WPF or was incidental, like typing speed in the editor, for instance. Mm-hmm. We were just profoundly better typing speed. The C# team in particular worked really, really hard on, you know, inserting text and popping up the IntelliSense when they're supposed to and not copying the buffers redundantly. And you know, the new editor's managed, right? And the old editor was COM. And they have, you know, native COM, so they're going through this COM interop. And so they're thinking about that and like, well, how many times do we go through this and how many strings do we copy? And, you know, do we really have to copy that many? And we have the snapshotting behavior available to us in the new editor. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we could use that. And so their times, I mean, they cut their typing test time like in half.
Nice.
You know, and so this is a big test where they open a big buffer and type a bunch of stuff at the bottom of it, like, you know, in an already complicated file, they type hundreds of lines. And it was taking like over 200 seconds at first, and now they got it down to like 73, I think it is.
Nice.
So, and that's, you know, that's a lot of typing. I mean, 73 seconds of typing, that's a lot of typing. But it's, you know, that's pretty snappy. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll notice when you use it, the typing is just really nice.
Excellent.
There were some nice throughput improvements on the VB side. The VB compiler was wired to write executables independently from compiling executables. So now we can overlap. We changed it so that the VB compiler starts compiling the next project while it's still writing out the executable for the previous project if they don't depend on one another. Because obviously if the next one needs the thing to be written, then you can't do that. But a lot of times you have sort of bushy solutions with lots of leaf nodes, and the leaves don't depend on one another in the thing, and so you can overlap. Well, that's a huge opportunity right there.
Absolutely.
For a bunch of different people. So that was something. They worked on their metadata reading. See, it's everywhere. It's like we looked at the compilation stuff, and we're like, oh, we're reading more metadata than we need to. Let's not do that. Oh, we're using too much memory here. Let's not do that. Oh, we can share this memory. Let's not reallocate. So we looked at memory churn. We have, at any given moment, we had sort of 10 to 12 scenarios kind of in the ICU, the critical scenarios. Mm. And things tended to move in and out of the ICU, if you like. So the ICU always looks bad, right? And those were the ones I was looking at on any given week. So, you know, I always had things that were like bright red flashing problem, you know, because whenever anything got good, of course, we took it out of the ICU and then it was no longer on my list. So my critical scenario is always, like, at any given moment, they always look bad. So I have to kind of, you know, to not be demoralized, I have to look at, you know, how the ones that we fixed are doing and, you know. So things passed through the ICU at various different times. We got big improvements in the web forms projects, lots related to the WPF stuff. Many of the debugger scenarios were substantially improved by virtue of the transitions. Less redraws, mm-hmm. Better algorithms for drawing watch windows and locals windows in the debugger resulted in, you know, more throughput there and just nice snappy stepping.
Sure.
So we don't, you know, redundantly paint stuff. Like, while you're going step, 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 you know, do we really have to go and fetch all the memory to redraw all the windows on every step? Like, you're just trying to do 10 steps in a row. So
yeah, yeah.
We can be more clever than that, and it just makes the whole thing feel a lot better. I mean, it was, I must have done, like, close to 150 different kinds of reports during this cycle. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's like a staggering number, and any one of those could have 5 bugs on average, you know, that needed to be addressed. And then some of those would be fixable, you know, because, like, you know, I got a pretty good hit rate, but, you know, like, if I was a batter, right, you know, like, what's my batting average? Of the 5, you know, maybe 3 or 4 you can actually do something about, and the other one's like Rico's out of his mind.
Yeah.
You know, so okay, whatever, you know. I'm out of my mind on that line, or maybe we'll have to do that in the next product. So bunches of different stuff.
Now let me ask a question in terms of the feedback that you got from. So I mean, people should know that. I mean, you were concentrating full time on performance work.
Yeah, basically.
In this milestone.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Not just me. I mean, it was job one for the whole team. I'd say the top priority. That and reliability issues generally. But a lot of times, you know, memory consumption, for instance, was right directly tied to the reliability. That's, by the way, our biggest worry right now. I mean, top of the list,
yes.
Job one from now to the finish line is getting memory usage down. So when you look in the beta of the perf issues that are left, what you'll see is it uses more memory than I'd like. Mm-hmm. That's what we're targeting.
Excellent.
Memory has got to go down. And already, I think, in builds that we have, because,
yeah,
of course, you know, we, by the time people get the beta, we've already moved on, right? So we've already got a couple weeks of working on memory, and we're going to keep working on memory. I think we'll be working on memory to squeeze every byte out till the last possible moment.
Excellent.
And that's, for me, that's really what we have to do left. Because in terms of responsiveness, most areas are pretty good.
Okay.
Most areas are pretty good. I think there's a few things that really still need a little bit of love. But generally, people are going to be really pleased. People who have seen it, you know, internally are flabbergasted, I think, by how much improvement we have. That you know that stupid ad references dialogue? You know the one?
Yes, I did.
The accursed thing?
Yes.
It's asynchronous now. It's async. It starts on... It's the only ovation I got. I gave a whole keynote, and the only ovation I got was when the ad references dialogue is now async. So it pops up on a sensible tab, not the slow one of death.
Okay.
And not only that, if you do click on the slow tab, it's asynchronous. So if you did it by mistake, which often happens, mm-hmm. you don't have to wait 2 minutes. And if you do wait, you know, if you see the one you want, you can stop, and the IDE still responds while you do it.
Perfect.
So still a little sluggish because it's a lot of disk I/O, but you know, it's not locked in any way. You just if you did it by mistake, you can switch to another tab. If you see the one you want, you can accept.
So let me ask a question there. I mean, is it possible since like when you fire up the instance of Visual Studio, it can go? I mean, but that would be a problem during load up. So while you're using it, maybe in the background, it's figuring out what you have on your machine, all the COM objects that are registered, etc., so that you then I just have this thing in memory, and you don't have to deal with this.
We could cache it, but the trouble is it changes anytime you install anything.
Fair.
So we like you know my old rule about caching. Caching implies policy. What's the policy? When would we discard it? And would we have to spend as much time figuring out whether the cache is valid as we would have computing the thing?
Fair
and
enough.
And how often does anybody hit the damn thing anyway? Really, the thing that I think just completely aggravated people was you'd bring it up and the default tab was the nightmare one, and that wasn't even the one you wanted. Yeah. Right, because you probably wanted the project tab. So great, I get to wait 2 minutes to see this result that I don't even want.
Yeah.
You know, thank you very much. And then I switch to another tab and I pick off the list of my and that tab comes up practically instantaneously because your reference is within your own solution.
Mm-hmm.
So now the thing that you probably want is the default. The thing that you don't do very often isn't as painful. It's pretty good. Maybe we could do better, but I think
right
I think we've you know I think it's a good amount of investment for what we have. And that thing was the bane of humanity. I got more complaints on that one thing than almost any other thing.
Wow.
So on my blog, and I kept saying, "Yeah, we heard that one. You don't of all the things to complain about that one. You don't have to feel like you need to complain about it again. We got your lab clear."
Cool. So now with Beta 2, what you're saying is major improvements in startup time.
Yep.
Because of what you talked about earlier.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What else? Like, what were some of the customer griefs from Beta 1 that you fixed?
Remember, not a perf one, but a fuzzy text, right? Lots of people didn't like
yes.
it's alias text, right? And there's the kind of people who like alias text and the kind of people who don't. I happen to like alias text. However, I respectfully submit that plenty of people don't. They want pixel-aligned text, and you can have that now.
Okay.
The WPF team... And they might not have done this. This is one of the great things about having Visual Studio dog food all these core technologies. Ultimately, they would have adopted the direct write technologies. But would they have done it now? I don't know. Would they have done it with such urgency? I don't know. But the fact that we needed it and that it was there was such customer demand for it, WPF gets better. They go after this aggressively. They've got D-Write there. And that helps in a bunch of different cases. Their remote desktop performance is much better, too. Again, because... You know, people are saying, hey, I'm trying to remote desktop into VS over a terminal server or into a VM, and it's just not as snappy as it should be. And the WPF team was responsive to that. So you'll also notice if you're using it via remote desktop that it's a lot crisper, you know, and you're not going to get painful scrolling like you got before. I think ultimately, you know, you'll find that pretty enjoyable. That's how I use it.
So let me ask a question. One of the really cool new or updated features of Visual Studio is the concurrency visualizer.
Yes.
And profiling tools.
Yes.
Did you run that over Visual Studio sources by any chance?
We did. we did, and has wanted me to do more with that. We've had our own tool that we use as well that's kind of been feeding into them.
Uh-huh.
One of their key guys has them. Used to work with me on the perf. You know this, of course.
Yes.
He used to work with me with Gerardo on the perf team for 2008, and we didn't have those tools at that time. And so I built some stuff for doing analysis, you know. And it's this, it's really ASCII art plots. It's so retro, but it's kind of cool. ASCII art's kind of cool because you can send it in mail. But the essence is really is right there. Like the kind of analysis that you want to do is there. You can see it in the ASCII art. And so I've been pitching those ideas to the concurrency group, Hauser's group, and those some of those visualizations happened in his thing. Some of those ideas happened in his tool. So it's kind of the same kind of analysis. And also, I've been pitching some of the ideas to the regular F1 profiler guys. So the standard VSTS profiler guys, and they cherry pick the good stuff, and then they kind of politely ignore some of the things that are, shall we say, less successful in my tool. Like, yeah, well, thanks for showing us that one, Rico. Yeah. So, again, my batting average is pretty good, and so I can throw together stuff. My tool uses same as the main concurrency tool. It uses ETW traces, and so there's a rich amount of data there that you can pick up. And, so we use that, and I try whatever wonky things. It's sort of genetically engineered to find problems in Visual Studio because that's what I use it for. So, anytime I need to do some kind of analysis that I can't do, well, I just add a feature to the thing. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times that turns into, hey, that's a general purpose thing. Get on the phone, talk to Haz, do him a demo, or talk to Steve Carroll, Steve Carroll, do him a demo and say, hey, you should maybe consider adding this. This should be in the flagship thing. And then, of course, we use the production tools as well.
Cool.
So we kind of get two-way feedback that way. So we feed them stuff, and we get to use the things. It turns out not everyone wants ASCII. The little X graphs, they want the stars. They want real plots.
Yeah, they want the real
turns
out. Yeah. So let me ask a question. We just talked about concurrency. If I'm running Visual Studio on eight processor machines, say I have 16 from a very lucky developer and somehow managed to have that kind of money to have that for my 16
have
core
friends
box,
in, have friends
is it going to run faster?
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys are going to scale?
Yeah, a lot of cases we'll cover that stuff. I just talked about some cases where we have more concurrency in the product. I think we have a lot more room to grow. I used to joke that we had all these threads and it was like a relay race. Like, we only one thread's allowed to run at a time. We have 22 threads or something, but, this thread, now that thread, now that thread, and they have to pass the baton, so only one thread. And, in fact, that was one of the first things Haz showed me. He's like, you want to see your net parallelism? It's like 1.1 CPUs you're using. And so, in the interactive cases, generally, sometimes, but not always, but, like, for instance, find in files, okay? That same group did a bunch of work for us to make find in files completely highly concurrent now. So when you do a find in files operation, you'll go. When you do builds, of course, the MS build technology will use all your processors. So I would say that the way to think about it right now is that the product has been enlightened in certain areas to be multiprocessor aware and really put all the cores to work.
Excellent.
And there still remains a lot of areas where there's room for improvement, mm-hmm. Remember, we talked about this from the perspective of it's a remodel, and like over three releases, we'd really like to make a big difference.
Absolutely.
And so we started doing things like to enable more concurrency in accessing the editor, for instance. Mm-hmm. The editor buffers, they're micro snapshots. You can access them in background threads. If you want to do a background analyzer, you can do it without going out of your mind. You don't have to snapshot the whole world every time anybody types a character. That's what you used to have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You type a character, boom, another snapshot. That's what the compilers are doing in the background. They don't have to do that anymore.
Excellent.
So that enables all this kind of stuff. So in this version, we've chosen some particular areas where we have multiprocessor enlightenments. In other areas, we've done enabling steps for future versions and for extenders. That was a big theme of my talk just now, that in many cases where we've done this enabling work, but we just didn't have time to take advantage of our own new plumbing, that's a great opportunity for a Visual Studio extender because they can go and do it. There's no ribbons in our thing. Well, there's no Well, WPF supports ribbons. An extender could create a ribbon system, mm-hmm. and use that with the ability to tear windows out and create a custom workspaces sort of solution.
Awesome.
On an extension basis, and that's fabulous. There's all kinds of latent opportunities there. In the editor, in the project system, in the windowing system, with the new shell services, with the presence of WPF generally.
Mm-hmm.
You want to try a HUD? You can do a HUD. Alpha blended, key statistics over here. What I want to do is a HUD. Current memory usage of the product. That's what I want. I want every Microsoft developer to see how much memory Visual Studio is using at this very instant, so they can maybe with a little Terminator style kind of overlay, so they can know if they just did something bad.
Yeah.
and it'll help us to be smart. But importantly, whatever information you think is cool, you have those choices. You can do alpha blended displays. You can do clipping. You can do animation. You can do transitions. You don't have to like WM paint your way to success. You can take advantage of all those WPF services.
Certainly.
And that's huge because we think WM paint is not the way of the future. It's hard to expend the kind of effort that it would take to take advantage of GPUs and GPU capabilities that people have in 2010 on that plan. Those were the two key sort of technological investments I talked about.
So let me ask a question. Why the bet on WPF as opposed to, say, Silverlight? Since I can run on the client now, it has a much smaller footprint. Yes? No?
No, I mean, Silverlight, okay, so remember, Silverlight now, there's Silverlight now and Silverlight when we started. And of course, like, you'd have to be nuts to not think these things aren't going to co-evolve and where are they going to go. So from our perspective, we're like, okay, which one has localization support? You know, which one has Win32 embedded, the best Win32 embedded support because we have to create a hybrid thing. So from our perspective, you know, as a desktop application, WPF was the good choice. But looking forward, you know, for me, it's like, well, Silverlight's going places, WPF is going places. There's some things about WPF that people, you know, don't like. They wonder why they're there. There's some great things that are happening in Silverlight that people think, well, that should come back to WPF. Clearly, these things are going to co-evolve. But as an architect thinking about where should Visual Studio be, the place for us to be is on this path, right? And so putting us on a place where we're doing retainable graphics and we're using WPF-like constructs, even if next release we say, you know what, WPF was a total mistake, we should definitely be on Silverlight, blah, 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 Silverlight is the way of the future, it's just, and Silverlight 4, this is total fiction, I'm making this up, right? Yeah. Silverlight 4 is the best thing in the world for IDEs and now has every feature we ever want, let's do that. Even if that were the choice, we've already taken a bunch of necessary enabling steps to get us there, right?
Yeah.
And our customers will be, you know, creating display trees and so forth, you know, UI elements, and those concepts are shared.
Mm.
And if they replace the underlying engine with the Silverlight engine, I'm totally making this up.
Sure.
Whatever they were to do, you know, if they were to, whatever they were going to do, this is the right path to get to the next stage of their co-evolution. And it's pretty clear they're going to co-evolve, and you know I think they'll want some kind of convergence or something. I mean, and I'm pretty sure they're thinking about that stuff. But
so now, what has the question? I asked this question before, in some sense. what are some of the key things that adding WPF or Silverlight or whatever, just essentially another abstraction layer on top of what Windows can do natively. What's the net? What's the win for customers, for the developer in the IDE writing code?
Well, for us, we're able to create better quality UI much more economically.
Okay.
I mean, look at the start page. The start page looks way, way better than it did. And we did like four or five of them, right? They're like, oh, you don't like, well, no, we don't like this. Oh, we'll live this. What about that? Mm-hmm. We were able to iterate four or five different times on that look very inexpensively. And the extensibility that it offers, right? Because the services is sort of a constraint-based layout and so forth, where you describe declaratively what kind of look you want, it creates opportunities for people to plug in, either direct plug-in kind of stuff by saying, hey, here's slots in the start page you could use or something like that, or in the editor surface, the editor has its own rules for doing layout and saying, here's a UI element, I want to put that in there, make me some room, but that whole way of doing graphics creates the opportunities. Add to that the ability to do animations, vector quality graphics, synchronize things, interoperate with Win32, and you've got something that is going to let us take more advantage of the services that are available on the PC at a price we can afford.
Excellent.
It's just, do you want to do, rounded windows or the docking window gadgetry?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
You know those little targeting things as they go from one to the other?
Yes.
We did that in a fraction of the time using WPF than compared to what we had to do before, and I think they work better.
It's the promise of managed code, right? I mean, this is what we've been pitching about .NET and managed code for all these years. Makes you more productive.
It makes you more productive.
So, yeah. And you guys are actually building your product in it.
Yeah.
which is awesome.
It makes you more productive.
Cool.
This is kind of a different kind of productivity, right? It's like I don't have to be a GPU genius, you know, in order to create a hot UI. I can have gradients, and I can change my mind about them and what have you, and get that productivity all the way up, and all I have to do is write the right markup or create the right UI elements. And I can offer those pieces access to my existing data elements. We have an interoperability layer there so that people can go in and data bind against our stuff. So that's important. That's how buttons get enabled and disabled. That's how bitmaps get fetched and so forth. Yeah. Right.
Very cool. So, I mean, back to the beta 1 feedback, which, of course, you incorporated in a beta 2 as best you could, because you guys are really actually amazing at doing that, listening to customers and iterating on top of that.
The customers are pretty smart.
Yeah, they are. Indeed. So what were some of the other things? I mean, were there any things that surprised you? Like, you thought something was really cool and customers were like, eh?
What did I think was really cool that customers thought was eh? I don't know that I have a good answer for you there.
That's fine. Yeah, let me ask it in a different way. Did any of the feedback surprise you that came piling in after Beta 1 was released and the months afterwards?
I'd have to say not so much.
Excellent.
The kinds of things they complained about were the kinds of things I was complaining about. People really were absolutely reinforcing, and helping, I think, prioritizing what was another thing to say. No, this is real. This isn't just us making this up. I mean, look at this. Everyone's hitting this, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's really easy to go and justify doing a direct write investment when you can see half the universe is telling you, you got to give me, you know, pixel-aligned fonts, okay? And so that affirmation is super, super valuable. And it kind of clears away a lot of the, you know, red tape. You know, you don't, like... There's nothing like 200, you know, complaints on your blog to understand that stuff. And it also helps to focus, like, what scenarios need to go in the ICU. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, okay, the big complaints around perf, you know, I mean, I knew the perf wasn't good. So I can't say that I was surprised that people had complaints about the areas. And I think their experience was pretty harmonious with our experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more a question of prioritization. Then it is a question of surprise.
Sure.
I was kind of happy that I felt like we were working on the right stuff, you know, because like they're, you know, what they're telling us is painful is what we thought was painful, and that means I'm measuring the right things. These really are the right metrics.
Excellent.
So I think there was a lot of affirmation there.
Cool.
Another thing we didn't talk about that people complained about is help. Can you find anyone that could say a nice thing about the help system in 2008? It's kind of hard to find people. And we couldn't give them the help experience in beta 1 because it wasn't ready. It was like it was close, but it wasn't ready. And so we had to do online help only in beta 1.
Okay.
And so we delivered the offline help story too. Mm-hmm. And it's like an in-browser experience. It's fast, fast, fast. It's whatever browser you use. So you want IE, you can have IE. If you like another browser, you can have it. It's got a little mini web browser that displays the content. And taking a cue from Office, the help is stored in XML form. It's XHTML in zip files.
Okay.
And so you know, when you do online help, basically we crack open the appropriate help file, get the XHTML, and a little web browser accesses them from the zip file and puts them on the page. The links are just links back to the same server. It's really slick.
So one question I have for you is, in terms of help, I mean, that's an excellent topic in its own right. I mean, when you're a professional developer, when I used to be a developer and using Visual Studio when I was, I would rely on IntelliSense, and then the time I would use help is when I had to figure out an API.
Sure.
Right? It's, you know, it takes a string, takes an int, returns a whatever.
Right.
That's useful. That's IntelliSense, which was like got me 80% of the way there.
Absolutely.
So how are people actually using help?
Well, this is kind of funny. I mean, some people I talk to, and they don't even know they're using help because IntelliSense is help. And so people say, well, do you use the help system? And they say, no. And I say, well, do you use IntelliSense? Like, yes. Well, that's help. I mean, a lot of what I used to do with help was hit F1 to see what order to put the args in, okay? And or you know, was it the you know, what is the exact type of the ARGs or what have you. So you don't have to do that anymore. You can just IntelliSense, and you can even, you know, browse to see the XML help if you want. But if you want to, it's when you don't know exactly what you need, right? And yeah. And you're looking for, well, what else is in this family? Like, you know, you're like, oh, I need the console functions. Well, you know, console what? You know, so let me show me all the other members. Show me the different, show me the things. Show me the related functionality. Show me how these hang together. Show me which ones are available in different runtimes. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you want to know, is this available in the compact framework? You know, well, how are you going to see that with IntelliSense? Because yeah. IntelliSense isn't really, you know, especially the best vehicle for getting that stuff. So anytime you're looking for something that's the next level of conceptual content, that's where you want to go. Anytime you want organization or related information, that's where you want to go. So if you want to find, you know, content about other pieces, other parts of the namespace, that can be really good. But I don't want to put IntelliSense down. The fact that people are as successful as they are.
IntelliSense is amazing.
It's, you know, it's great. And it didn't, it's comparatively new.
Look, I mean, you know what about IntelliSense that I find really interesting? Is that whenever we have the canonical argument of static typing versus dynamic typing, it is IntelliSense that Anders will talk about and go, hey, look, I'm used to being able to understand and what the type is and what the type represents and what it can do.
Yep.
And that's IntelliSense, mm-hmm. and that's static
yep.
typing. Now, of course, there's type inference.
Yep.
But my point is, come on, man. IntelliSense is huge to all the developers.
Absolutely,
out there,
absolutely.
Including and C++ developers,
I think it was VB5 that it made its first appearance. So it's like, it's comparatively new. Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, development stuff goes, it's comparatively new. But let me tell you something else, though. Maybe you don't know. Like, you know, JScript is notoriously difficult to give good IntelliSense for because it's dynamic.
Yes.
Okay, but have you seen what we do with JScript now? It's completely out of control. Scott Goo did this demo. It's on Channel 9. And where you can, it's doing partial evaluation of pieces of the JScript, even in different loops with dynamically created variables, and figuring out what the actual type's going to be kind of in this emulated mode. And they're like, you know, I don't know how many Turing incomputability rules they're breaking doing this. I mean, it's completely nuts. They must have some, you know, secret sauce to evaluate that. Like, they even need to evaluate through infinite loops, and somehow they realize that they're looping and they stop, and you know, nice. So they have a bunch of heuristics to give you pretty good IntelliSense. But in the JavaScript world, in order to get that, you literally have to do piecewise evaluation of the actual code, mm-hmm. so you can see what the real types are going to be, so you can offer them choices about what the object are, or even just the existence of variables, because you can make variables out of thin air.
Sure.
So
it's like background execution.
So it's kind of, yeah, it's like this sort of, you know, but that's in there too, and it's all in the IntelliSense pipeline, and,
beautiful.
You know, that's what we're doing. So I think ultimately you want a combination of all those different things so that you can give a better dynamic experience, mm-hmm. you know, and you have to try to do all this without, like, doing the side effects, you know, because if the loop, like, say the loop has format the C drive in there, well, you don't want to run that part. Right? But you want to run the parts that are going to give you a type information, you know, mm-hmm. about what's the type of one thing and what names are being created. And so there's sort of this selective, you know, I don't know, you'd have to ask those guys what's going on. But I saw Goo's demo, and it was pretty slick.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty slick. And so the dynamic languages want it too. Mm-hmm. It's great. And it does, in many ways, put API help out of business. But it doesn't really. It's just API help delivered in a better form factor. It's the same help content it comes from, ultimately. You know, it's the XML docs. You know, that's part of our help pipeline. That's going to go create the actual, you know, the other kind of documentation too. So it's just better. In fact, if we had more things, like say I could deliver you profile data with the same non-invasive, exactly right there when you needed it, information about APIs and API cost, like IntelliSense. That would be fabulous.
It would be great.
Yeah, except for I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Or you could tell me what my memory usage
is going to be, right? Memory forecaster.
Memory forecaster.
Well, maybe with the background execution, maybe we're right there.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't. You know, obviously, but the idea that you don't have to switch modes to get at the information you want, right? And that we should be able to, from where you are, be able to tell you where you need to go. That's crucial. That's mm-hmm. the key element of IntelliSense. And you'd like to be able to browse that way. You'd like to be able to debug that way. Tooltips are great for the same reason. You know, you just point at stuff. So the data tips where you look at a variable, you don't have to think about a watch window or whatever. You just, whatever you're on, you point at it, boom, you get the value. Point, 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 you get the value, and you can see what's going on. It's very non-invasive, you know, non-modal, sure. non-modal. You don't think about, oh, I need a new window. Oh, I need to pop up a debugger. It's all very, you know, the debugger kind of fades into the background in that context.
Absolutely. I mean, by the way you guys, I mean, by the fact that it's an integrated development environment, you know, one would think, you know, why should I ever have to use a web browser? Why should I ever have to go to MSDN, man, right? I could just make some web service calls, man. Here's the API I want.
Stuff
give me
there.
The data.
Sure, sure.
I mean, the future is very bright, and especially in the ultra-connected world.
Yeah, and in fact, that was another one of our big themes. Remember, connected was one of the themes for VSL of the future, too. And I think we only started scratching the surface on that one, you know. We have to get the perf right. We have to get the UI right. We have so many fundamentals.
Certainly,
you know, just getting COM interop and the amount of COM interop that we have to do to keep our legacy components working well with our managed components. COM interop has never looked so good. Partly because you know we drove the battleship that is Visual Studio right down COM interop Boulevard. And can you drive a battleship down a boulevard?
Yes, you can. If it's Visual Studio, you can.
Yeah.
That's talking about COM interop.
I guess that was kind of a mixed metaphor. Anyway, but importantly, you know, we stress test a lot of technologies.
Sure.
We stress test WPF by doing it, and we prove that you could do a flagship application in WPF. We did it, and it's snappy. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we have memory problems, but they're not WPF memory problems. Our memory problems are not because WPF is bad. We can look in the mirror for our memory problems.
Are they related to sort of, the you know, what everybody harps on all the time about, you know, the footprint of .NET, since you're so fully managed
it's,
now?
It's not even the .NET footprint itself.
Cool.
That's comparatively modest. I'll tell you, there's two major phenomena. There's images, so the code we load. We load a lot of code, and we load more code than we need to load.
Okay.
Sometimes that's because it's managed code, and it's super easy to create dependencies between managed DLLs. There's no law that says you have to create DLLs that depend on one another in very rich ways that, you know, cause abundant preloads, but it's so easy to do that people tend to fall into this trap. And so, to some extent, we've done that too. So partly it's that. Partly it's that there's we've done a lot of work moving stuff out of the GAC and otherwise making it easier to install the product with less of an impact on the machine. Mm-hmm. That's really helpful for extension writers. That's a new execution path for the CLR, so we're stress testing that, and they've been helping us along by finding, you know, we've been finding problems to say, hey, where you're doing extra mapping in this case, hey, you're doing extra mapping in this case, can we get rid of those? So there's some extra mapping going on that's just a CLR issue. You know, we'll address that. There's some cases where we have aggressive cross dependencies. We'll address that. Mm-hmm. Those are the managed code aspects. The other aspect is dynamic memory, stuff that gets allocated. Mm-hmm. This is where the managed stack really shines because the fragmentation is like non-existent. Overall bad use of memory, it's not there. There's hardly any. Where we're finding leaks is on the native side, and like, you know, unreleased COM, you know, the usual COM.
Sure.
Oh my goodness. And sometimes, and then for the double whammy, it's a COM reference holding on to a managed object, holding on to a tree. So then now the GC is implicated with the stuff. But at the crux of it, it's the age old, I forgot to release, you know, and I got to go and find some guy that I didn't addref. And I'm like, okay, how much would I pay to have been able to rewrite that code and manage so I didn't have to addref release at all and I didn't have this problem in the first place? The other thing is that people love to create heap in native code. Create heap is the bane of my existence. Everyone, you can't, oh, I can't use your heap. Oh, no, I got to have my own heap. And I'm going to put 12 bytes in it. Thanks a lot. So, and I can't, you know, he's his own private heap. Oh, no, somebody might corrupt me. So all kinds of unmanaged code likes to create its own heap, and they aren't cheap, and they tend to be mostly empty. And they're like, oh, my heap's not fragmented. Yeah, well, you know, you're, say, 1 meg heap that you put 100K in. Okay, you got 900K K of unused stuff that no one else can use. That's address-space fragmentation. Okay, I mean, it. Sure, your part looks compact, but when you put it in context of the overall memory, you know, he's got a bunch wasted. And, you know, he's saving it for a rainy day. Well, everyone's doing this. And so you've got all these people with independent heaps. In the managed world, you share a heap, and so you never have this problem. Everyone, you know, is share and share alike, and there's one heap, it gets collected, and it stays compact and stuff. And so so that's super helpful. And as a consequence, our dynamic problems, dynamic data problems, tend to be native rather than managed, which is very interesting. So the code size problems are more on the managed side, and the data size problems are more on the native side.
Interesting.
And we need to get both under control. The leaks, there's still places where we have leaks. So if you do repeated cycles, you find we don't always get all the memory back, and so some of that's ADRIF release. So we're on it. I mean, what can I say other than that's, you know, that's job one between now and release to get the to get those leaks under control. And get usage, just general usage down. So, you know, if you look at our memory usage, we don't want any slope. You know, the usage over time, we don't want a slope because that's leaking. And we want it, you know, so we want to shift the whole graph down and flatten it out. Right? That's the deal. And I'm sure that at the end of the day, we won't get all the leaks. But, you know, if we can get it down to the point where it just leaking so such an insignificant amount that it doesn't really matter, then that's pretty good. And if we can get our overall usage down, that's pretty good too. So that'll be a big focus area.
Perfect. Now listen, so speaking, I mean, and it's all about time. Now speaking about time, if we go back in time, in history, and you've been on Visual Studio for many, many years. And
you well, it depends on like all the if you count my first stint in DevDiv, working on like C6 and PWB as sort of anti Visual Studio, then really a long time.
Really
I celebrated
a long time.
21 years. Just a few weeks
Congratulations.
Ago.
Congratulations.
So, So, yeah, I did 7 years kind of on DevTools, and then 7 years in MSN, and then 7 years on DevTools again. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So on this most recent stint, without bringing up archaeology, it's still 7 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, I mean, and you released a rather long Chris Broom-style blog post.
Yeah.
So large that it takes a while to load.
Yeah, it might be causing older browsers to crash.
But it's an amazing piece, you know, of your series of history.
Yeah, it's today. I'm putting out the last installment, and it's a doozy. With that one, it's about 5,000 words. If you add the whole of it together, it's like half a book. I think it's 20,000 words altogether.
Okay.
With all 10 installments, and the last one is quite a doozy because I covered like sort of up to the minute. I went over this release and I covered like all the stuff from my keynote talk today, plus most of the stuff we talked about here, plus a bunch of other stuff.
Excellent.
I've actually not traditionally gone the Chris Broom style. You remember, even when I talked to you about this before, I'm like, I think I'd rather do more frequent posts than a little longer, not quite as long. And so I've tended to be kind of around 300 to 1,200 words. And this is
those days are gone now. But it's great that you're still blogging, right? Because you are extraordinarily busy.
It's pretty fun, and I was really motivated to do it. You know what it was? It was the documentary on Channel 9.
Absolutely, like Tina Summerford.
Yeah, I looked at the thing, and I'm going to tease
you.
Which
is a great piece of work.
It's a great piece of work, and I thought, oh no, but it's all wrong. It's all wrong, but because. Of course, it had to be all wrong because there is no one history of Visual Studio, one documentary, right? Like, no matter who you talk to, I could say it's all wrong because you didn't get, you know, well, I mean, unless you talk to all 6,000 people who ever worked on the thing, you're going to get their perspective. Sure. And so I'm like, well, they don't have my perspective. So clearly, it's all wrong. So I was motivated to write my perspective, which was different than, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of VB stuff, and you got the VB. What's the name?
Person who created
the
it.
Person.
Huckabee.
Yeah.
Right? Is that his name?
No, that sounds wrong. Maybe it is wrong.
But he's an external guy, friend of Bill's back in the day.
And he did the thing. And he meant it for the show. Anyway, so which is a cool story. I mean, that's really cool, and you got Goo and so on and stuff. But I'm like, well, there was no C++ history. I'm like, what, did C++ not happen? And there's, like, the extensibility story, you know. So, like, to do that, well, you'd have to talk to Doug, and you'd have to talk to Mark Hall, and you have to talk to me, and you have to talk to Jan, and you have to talk to Anders, and you have to talk to, I mean, like, it'd be Yeah. It'd be like, you know, a Hollywood movie by the time you were done, and it wouldn't even fit in 3 hours. It'd be like, I don't know, Lord of Visual Studio or something.
Sure.
So I wanted people to kind of see some other angles, and so I thought, well, it'd be fun to write about it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to encourage people to write about their story. You know, so what's kind of cool is in some of the comments, people who worked on it in the old days, like me, some of my old bosses, Manny Vellon wrote a little something. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard from Dave Wheel, but I'm sure Dave is going to write a little something. Jan wrote a little something. There's different people will kind of saw and will chime in, like, oh, what were they doing, and how was their part, and how do they remember it, you know, and what do they remember of VC1, and customers were writing about kind of, well, what they were doing at that time, and how they used the tool, and so I thought it'd be kind of fun for many people to sort of write about their, you know, their, my history of Visual Studio, and make it a little bit more personal, mm-hmm. and maybe if you added those all up, then you could get, like, the whole truth.
The whole truth.
The whole,
sure.
You know. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, yeah. The Geek Fest and Dee Dee and all the stuff she was doing.
Oh, totally.
It was totally fun.
And a lot of people didn't really know that.
No, they didn't. But it was, like, it's a big part of how it got into the developer culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty cool. I mean, it's also pretty cool to talk about, you know, amazing things we did with, you know, debugging 16-bit Windows, and that's kind of fun, and that was, you know, that's what I was doing.
Mm.
And it's hard to find one umbrella to put all of that under.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I joke that that the official documentary is all wrong, and, you know, my version is the truth, but that's not really accurate at all. It's just, it's like, there's so many perspectives.
It's one perspective on definite truth.
Yeah. There's so many perspectives. I mean, you know, anybody who writes just their perspective is going to be missing out on
absolutely
the thousands of other perspectives. So anyway,
the fact of the matter is, it's a Visual Studio with 2010 is, I mean, it has evolved into an amazing and productive product, and I think, I mean, it is the de facto way to write applications that run on Windows or the web or Target. Our platform in any way. And I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of C++ developers. You know, back in the day, we weren't using, C++ developers weren't using Visual Studio very much as their IDE.
It was a tough sell.
But now that's not the case.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see that, because we did not forget about C++ in this.
Yeah, they have that whole new code-focused thing, and they have, they finally got rid of my browser code, thank goodness. I wrote some of the stuff that they just got rid of, you understand. And
all
it's
right.
Still, like, I think they should have got rid of it 10 years ago, frankly. And speaking as the guy who created it, I think I can say that authoritatively. But, you know, they've got it all in this lovely database. It scales better. It's more correct. You don't get corrupt .ncb files. You know, it's pretty slick. And that's really sweet for the C++ guys.
Absolutely.
They got the new C++ project system, so it's built on MS Build. They get MS Build incremental stuff. They get multi-core. They get, you know, one consistent way of defining flags. And it's super extensible, so if you're trying to do, you know, the mobile bits on top of it, you know, adding different flavors of native compile has never been easier with that tool set. And that's just, you know, it's kind of funny. I mentioned this, like, it's just, by the way, we also, you know, that's a major investment, you know, and that's a big thing they did.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you for taking so much time. I know I've
my pleasure.
Let this go usually too long as I do with you, but I'm sure people will watch this till the end. They're still watching right now. So, hey, congratulations.
Thanks very much. Get the beta, get the bugs to us, help us make sure we're focused on the right thing. You know, tell us about your memory woes. That'll help.
Absolutely.
That'll make sure we're covering the
right
thing.
We can send you some memory footprint.
Whatever works.
Deep technical stuff.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
Can you send it up to a web service somewhere?
Huh? Yeah. You know, we need that.
Yeah.
We need memory dump in the sky or something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. A memory dump in the sky. That's cloud computing,
Cloud memory. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Hey, great to see you again.
Pleasure.
Take care.